Blog Talk Radio.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, do ordain and establish this
and
Constitution,
so, my fellow Americans,
the United States of America.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for
this nation. Under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
For peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
From the very heart of the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America, from the soul of the Bellwether State, Missouri Grassroots Radio is live.
The voice of liberty is Missouri Grassroots Radio Network. This is the Hour of Truth, Thursday, August 23rd. I'm Dave. Right over there is Lisa. Hi, Lisa.
Good evening, Dave. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well.
So, what do you think about this thing? The Aiken thing. We talked about it already.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, this afternoon I got a piece of an interesting piece of mail today from the Republican Party of Missouri. And on a whim, I decided to scribble them a little note on their fundraising card and send it back to them. And I'm gonna start encouraging others to do the same as well. Until they stop playing chicken with Todd Aiken and trying to throw him under the bus for this issue, so that they can put their own puppets in office and take his place. I think that everybody who gets mail from the Republican Party asking for money ought to send the card back blank with a handwritten note scribbled that they will not support the Republican Party now or in the future as long as they continue these tactics. And so I'm going to encourage everybody to send that message back to the Republican Party. That's what I think of it. And I think that this is all about power and control. And I think that the only way to get anywhere is you have to hit the folks where they live. And so with that, you know, if they're going to pull their fundraising away from Todd Aiken and pull their support away from Todd Aiken, I think that it's about time then that the folks start making a claim for themselves and tell them we're going to pull our fundraising and our support away from them as well.
Well, yeah, I hear you. We've got a caller already tonight. This is gonna get us some callers. This Aiken thing. We've got Rick from St. Louis. Rick, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, very well. I used to be on the Black Spear every now and then. I'm kind of glad to hear you guys starting up with the grassroots and having the telephone call-in show. So this is great.
We do. What do you got to say about Todd Aiken?
My disappointment with Todd Aiken. I've supported Todd Aiken for a long, long time, and I'm not in this district. I'm actually in Lacey Clay's district, but I encouraged him for Todd Aiken to run for senator, and I'm kind of glad that Ed Martin changed his mind and went for Aiken's seat at the time. I liked his politics. I like everything about him, but I'm very, very disappointed that he even decided to go on the Jayco report. Jayco's not going to give anybody a break. That's a conservative. I watched Bill Randall on the Jayco report, and Bill did an excellent job, and Charles Jayco was frustrated. So yeah. I figured the next conservative was going to get a double dose of Jaycoism, and he did. And I'm disappointed he went on there. He was the Republicans ever since the debate on ABC with George Stephanopoulos, the Democrats and the journalists, had been trying to get this off of the finances and the job and the economics and get it on the social issues so that the Democrats can lead the way that way and make the Republicans look ridiculous. And Todd Aikens just walked into a trap. It was set for him before he walked the aisle, and he was ill prepared for it.
I agree, Rick, and we've talked about that already. You know, someone told me today that Todd Aiken's campaign staff amounted to his wife and his son, and that's why he made this mistake. Now, I know that not to be true. I saw Todd Aiken when he came down to my part of the state, and he was very, very well handled. He was not allowed to talk to anyone for more than, you know, a couple of seconds and shake a few hands. He was told there was someone at his elbow all the time to pull him away from anything controversial. This man was well handled. And so it's not a, but somebody in that handling staff needs to be fired, A, because he even went on that show. But if you're going to go on that show, I mean, just to show that, you know, you're well-rounded, you damn well better go on there with all the right answers. You don't go on there unprepared for someone to ask you, for goodness sakes, any abortion question. You know that's coming.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But,
Rick, did you see the entire interview?
Pardon?
Did you see the entire interview on the Dayko show?
No, but I did see the exact. Not I seen more than just the short one. When it comes to the abortion question, I seen that whole segment. Yes.
Okay.
But I didn't see the whole 30 minutes. I don't even know if it's on 30 minutes. The only time I ever see Dayko is when I'm trying to get Fox News on Sunday morning at 9 o'clock, and Dayko's just coming off.
Or trying to get something sour out of your stomach.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about reporters. I'm a little disappointed with Chris Wallace too. I mean, I think he's trying to be too much trying to equal the conversation, and he's slamming some of the people. He's bringing up some things that don't need to be brought up. It's not making any points one way or the other. So I wish he would go back to who he was 6 or 8 months ago.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely, Rick. Well, thanks for the call. We've got to move on here. And
well, I got one other quick
announcement. Okay, go ahead. Please.
Okay,
yeah.
I'm with Missouri Conservative Coalition, and I think we've wrote both of you, and we're going to have a meet and greet question and answer period with Dave Spence next month. And
So said I'm Rick, you meant I'm Rick Perry.
Absolutely, that's me.
You ran for president.
I was actually. I like him. As a matter of fact, I lobbied the Texas House when Rick was a Democrat, and he used to be a lot better debater than what he is now. So
Ahead and make your announcement about the Spence meet and greet. That's a good thing.
Well, right now it's scheduled for, I think the tentative date is September the 8th at 10 a.m. in Columbia. We'd like for leaders and members of the grassroots association throughout Missouri to come and sit down and have an open discussion. No gotcha, no trick questions, no, you know, find out who he is, how he's going to run his campaign. And if he's my big question for Dave is he going to debate? And is Nixon going to debate him? And if so, what the topics will be. But I'm sure everybody else has a different item or something they want to know, you know, professionally and politically about Mr. Spence. And I think he's being very gracious to open up to us.
Where's the venue, Rick? Where's it going to be held? Yeah, where?
We haven't picked a location yet. As soon as we have a location, I'll let all of your grassroots associates know, but I'll contact you two personally.
Sure, and call in and make a pitch for it.
Okay, we can do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
When are you guys going? How often?
We're here every night. We're here every night at 7, Rick.
Okay, well, you have a good time, and thank you for letting me on, and thank you for the show.
No, thank you. Thank you, Rick. Good call. Thanks. Okay, and there we go, Lisa. Anyway, you were saying about telling the RNC, MRC, that you weren't sending any more money to the state people till they got themselves in line. And I agree with you. You know, this has become more than abortion. This has become more than a misspeak about the nature of rape. This is, you know, and I'm going to tell you, and everybody who's listened to this show, everybody who's read me knows I didn't vote for Todd Akin in the primary. I didn't, and everybody knows that I called for and predicted that he would pull out. He hasn't. And I'm getting a real kick now out of watching the firestorm that's brewed up here. This has become, for you folks who are Republicans, quite a deal. I mean, it has become who owns my party, hasn't it?
I think that's what this is about. This isn't about abortion or rape or, you know, social issues or anything. This is about the establishment Republicans trying to maintain their stronghold nationally and regionally and in the state. Todd Akin is kind of a renegade. He's not a puppet for the party, and I think that what they're trying to do here is make sure that he does not get elected so that they can put one of their own in and who will be more manageable. That's my...
Absolutely. This thing started, in my mind, a long, long time ago. This thing started, I mean, this kind of firestorm that is just coming to a head today started back when Mitt Romney was kind of pre-selected as the presidential candidate, especially in Missouri. And I'm telling you, Missouri, if you're listening to me in Missouri, you know this to be a fact. If you're listening from outside the state, then you might not know this. But if you're in Missouri and you're listening, I'm preaching to the choir. Missouri was kind of split between Ron Paul and Rick Santorum. The Missouri non-binding primary went right to Rick Santorum. Now, granted, there weren't many people coming out, but I'm telling you, within 24 hours of that primary, the party was spinning that already, saying, well, you know, the caucuses will give us more of a feel of what Missourians really think. And you heard the Ron Paul people and the Rick Santorum people both leading up to the caucus saying, we're going to get screwed. We are absolutely going to get screwed here. And sure enough, they did. And Missourians came home with their tail between their legs and a really bad taste in their mouth for their own party. And what they did was they came home bound and determined to take their party back, beginning with the state level. And suddenly, the battle cry, the war slogan on the street, all over, at VFWs, at churches, at meetings, anywhere and everywhere that anybody could get together in groups of three or four or more, the words you heard were words like Randall's and Moon and Warren and Varner and Robinson and Palmer, Parker, those kind of words, and those became the battle cry, and the party saw something going bad. They saw something going real bad, and they pulled a lot of punches, and they called in a lot of favors, and they got a lot of Democrats to come over, and Carl and I, who's going to be on later tonight, we're talking about this is a perfect time to show people the need to close this damn primary. And that's going to get me out. That's going to kick me out of the primary. But I'll live with that for seeing some purity back in this thing. And I'm telling you, these same people who came away from the presidential stage with this sour taste in their mouth, they bowed their heads one more time after the primary 3 weeks ago when they got slammed again and said, "Thy will be done" to the great party. But this bile that was rising in their throat was just getting stronger and stronger and stronger. And this is it. This is the head. This is where the party, I mean, even those who were not behind Todd Akin to start with, this is where the Missouri grassroots Republicans are saying, that's it. Enough is enough. We own this party. You don't own this party. And I'm telling you, the Republican Party better pay attention to what's going on in my mind, or they're apt to walk away from this about a half a million people short.
Yeah, I think they're causing a huge division, Dave. I mean, they drew a line in the sand, and it just to me shows me how desperate they are not to give up any more of their power.
Yeah.
Because of the line in the sand that they've drawn. And, you know, if they don't walk this thing back and get behind Akin in this race, I think it's going to hurt them long term.
That's right, and you've got all these party people out here. There's Carl. I'm gonna bring Carl on into the studio now, and he can get in on this if he wants to. You've got all these party people out here, and Carl, how you doing?
Hey, Dave, doing well.
I know I don't want to call you a quote unquote party guy, but I know you are loyal to the Republican Party. I mean, I know you're a lifelong Republican.
That depends on who you talk to.
and you're loyal to the party, so feel free to get in on this. But you know what? These people from the party, the ones who are trying to talk Akin into jumping down, they're saying, you know what you're doing to the rest of the ticket? And I'm saying right now, and this is me, an outsider, just looking in at what's going on in there, and I'm saying, you know, nobody is drooling more than Donna Ivanovich and Cynthia Davis watching what's going on here, because you may be looking at a 500,000 Republicans suddenly freed from the shackles of party politics out there looking for a liberty-minded candidate here and there. Carl.
Yes, sir. Oh, you were you directed that to me. You know, Dave, I don't think the issue is Republicans at this point. You have to look at, because Republicans by themselves can't win any election. Neither can any Democrat candidate. So you got to look at where the middle is, and that's where you really have to gauge it. I mean, I think that Aiken is dismissing the people calling for his resignation and putting all of his trust and decisions on those who are supporting him to get in or stay in. And then that's maybe well and good, but I don't think he's looking outside of either one of those groups, which is where he ought to be looking.
I agree, Carl. You don't win anything without the independents, without the middle, without the guy like me. You just don't win anything. But you don't even get to approach a guy like me until your base is solid. And I think this is it. I think the Republican base is in serious trouble here, and I think they could save it all right now by getting back behind Aiken. They could save their base. There's still time to reach out to the middle with Todd Aiken. And I mean, I don't understand it. I think they're in a real precarious position.
Well, I mean, the concern should be: are they even looking about how to rescue that, or are they spending all their time trying to get him to withdraw? Because
right.
They're making decisions based on knowledge. I mean, I'm talking about real knowledge. But where is that middle? Where is the base? Is it really solid, and is the base really broad? And then where is the middle, and how can we win this if we keep Aiken in? If someone tells me that they're actually doing that, then I would be happy. I don't get the impression that they're looking any further than trying to remove him, and I think that's wrong.
Yeah, I do too. And that's not what we're here to talk about tonight, Carl. So we'll put a wrap on that. It was fun talking to you about that, though. I like to hear what you have to say about it, because I know you're and again, I want to stay away from the terms that are derogatory, like party insider. But I know you're a lot more inside than I am. So,
If you look at, I was Speaker Pro Tem. So, you know,
I'm
in the Republican Party. But, you know, I was Speaker Pro Tem because I was willing to take opposite stands as well.
Mm-hmm.
But trying to figure out how to make things work instead of just saying that's not going to work or won't work or we won't do it.
Exactly.
And if you don't have that, you're not going to be successful. And that goes back to what I'm talking here with what the party's trying to do, whether state or otherwise. If they're not trying to figure out how to make it work, they'll figure out if it can work, which I'm not convinced they're doing. They're just spending all their time trying to say it won't work. And that's not the way to go about it. And so, you know, but just so you know, I'm not always the the Republicans are always right deal. We're doing something right now on a bill coming up in veto, House Bill 1329.
Oh, yeah,
Republicans passed with Democrats. I mean, it was a huge margin, 120-something in the House, and it was unanimous in the Senate.
Yep.
To raise taxes on the local level without a vote of the people.
That's
unconstitutional. You know, Governor Nixon is right, and I'm getting a little heat for saying Governor Nixon is right, because all the Republicans coming out said this is our chance to make Nixon look bad. And my point to them is, you're the ones look bad because you're doing the wrong thing.
They got a couple of vetoes there they should be using to make him look bad.
Yeah, exactly.
Without having to do something stupid.
Exactly, and this is it. I mean, this is all political. This veto override is political. And we've got a couple of blogs, and that's not what we're talking about tonight either, but hopefully we can come back and talk about for veto, because we need people stirred up about that. We need people contacting their representatives, because right now the representatives are being told this is not a tax increase. This is something they've been doing for 60 years, which is true, but they've been doing it illegally for 60 years.
That's right.
And just because I come back and put a stamp of approval on it doesn't make it any more right.
That's right.
And then we have a little constitutional issue that says that local taxes are supposed to be raised by a vote of the local people, not by the legislature. And so, I mean, there's lots of bad about that. We'll be doing an action alert on that when it comes to closer veto. But those sorts of things, I don't care what the party is, we can't let people do it.
No, exactly. And tell me if I'm not wrong, and then I want to pass on this too and get to what we're supposed to be spending some time on tonight, Carl. This legislation is a result of the Supreme Court having said you can't do this anymore.
Right, right. And I don't think I put it up yet, but I'm going to put the Supreme Court language up because it's not hard to read.
Right.
And it's pretty clear as to where the problem is.
Right.
And so what the legislature is trying to do is say, well, we can fix that problem, which technically they can. I mean, you can write anything. But what's going to happen is if they override this veto, it'll go into effect. Somebody's going to challenge it, rightfully so, and the courts are probably going to throw it out again.
And that's
so there'll be all this uncertainty again. And what people really don't realize, and what really get them torqued up, if you live in a county or city, you live in Greene County, right?
Yes.
Greene County does not have a use tax.
Right.
If you had purchased a car in April, you would have paid the state use tax, and that's it.
Right.
If this bill gets overridden, you're going to get a bill from Greene County and from Springfield saying you owe us X, probably a couple hundred bucks, on that car you bought in April because there's a retroactivity clause in this bill.
Right.
Now tell me that's not a tax increase on you.
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, and like you said, any if there wasn't a tax there yesterday and there is a tax there today, regardless of the fact that a year ago from yesterday there was a tax there, if there wasn't
right.
a tax there yesterday and there is a tax there today, that's a tax increase.
Yep. And you know, if there's a tax increase, that's fine as long as you, a Greene County resident, gets to vote on it, and your Greene County Commission has had at least three opportunities to ask you since the court decided this. And
right.
Have they asked you yet?
Nope.
There you go.
Okay, Carl, you are my expert on the pro side of this police control thing in St. Louis. And what's the bill actually has a name. What is it?
Well, I think they've termed it Safer Missouri. I don't know if that's the bill name, but I know the committee supporting it is calling it the Safer Missouri committee. I don't.
And so let's jump to the end. The outline I sent you of where I wanted to go with this thing tonight. We're going to jump to the end of it though, because we have a lot of listeners here, and not all of them are from St. Louis. And so I want you to start by telling us why we should all care what the heck you do with your police department in St. Louis.
Well, first off, I don't live in St. Louis, so it doesn't bother me. But
okay,
I mean, as far as being a taxpayer, but here's why. Imagine that the state in January passed a law to come take over the Greene County Sheriff's Department, the Springfield Police Department.
Right.
How would you like that? You get to pay all the bills on it. We'll share and maybe have some exposure on the state level to your liability for things that they do. But how would you like that? Because you're going to pay all the bills, but you don't get to run it. You don't get to go talk to your sheriff. You don't get to go talk to your police chief and complain to them and ask them to make changes, because they don't work for you. They work for the state. How would you like that?
So, yeah, I wouldn't like it. I wouldn't like it. And that's the sell. That is the sell to a guy who lives in Lee's Summit or a guy who lives in is just the fact that this is not fair. And if you wouldn't want it to be fair for you, then you don't want it to be fair for
right.
for someone who lives in St. Louis.
So you skipped. I mean, I know you skipped to the end. I mean, this is a definite yes. Well, people get it. I mean, if you're paying for your police department, you ought to be able to pick up the phone and call your mayor, call your commissioner, call whoever you've elected to represent you, and complain and expect something to be done about it. And if you're a resident of St. Louis today, that won't happen, because your mayor doesn't control your police department. He doesn't appoint your police chief. He doesn't appoint the police board. He does sit on the police board, but he's one of five members and has no control over that. It's all controlled by people appointed by some guy in Jefferson City, who today happens to be Jay Nixon. Before him, it was Matt Blunt. Before him is Bob Holden, et cetera, et cetera. Who, while they run statewide, St. Louis, for example, is only one part of the state. And so if you don't want or like the idea that your tax money is being spent on your local police department, but you don't have a say in it, then you should vote yes on this proposition. But you skip to the end, so let's go back to the beginning.
Right.
And how did this all happen? Because
right.
this whole thing, the reason that the state controls the St. Louis Police Department is absolutely all political. There is no reason for the state to control the police department in St. Louis. In 1860, the state elected a new governor, Governor Jackson. And Governor Jackson, when he was running, never mentioned that he was for secession.
Right.
Because there was no war on at the time, but he never mentioned that. He was elected, and in 1861, one of his first acts was to try to get the state to secede. And one of his problems, one of his concerns, was that the largest paramilitary force in the state of Missouri happened to be located in St. Louis as the St. Louis Police Department. And it also, in St. Louis, was the location of the largest federal arsenal west of the Mississippi at the time. And so his thought was, if I combine, and St. Louis, by the way, at the time was Republican.
Right.
And Governor Jackson was not, and neither was most of the legislature. So Governor Jackson, who, by the way, is the only civilian to ever lead a Civil War battle, from what I'm told. He lost, but he led anyway. he had convinced the legislature that this was a danger to the state, and convinced enough of them, the majority of them, to vote to take away the control of the St. Louis Police Department from the elected officials of St. Louis, elected by the taxpayers and the citizens and voters, and bring it under state control and the appointment of this police commission. And guess who appointed the police commission?
Governor
Jackson.
Yeah.
And Governor Jackson appointed friends that he knew were Southern sympathizers, and they were quoted in papers and later in time that they knew what their job was, that the takeover of the police department was essentially a war act, and that they knew what they were supposed to do. And so for over 150 years, the Civil War has took place, and the St. Louis Police Department has been under control of the state. The Civil War, in case some people didn't get a good education, ended on April 9th, 1865, with the surrender of Lee at Appomattox.
Right.
Reconstruction started soon after that, and, you know, we had a lot of corruption across, particularly in the South, with carpetbaggers and scalawags and so on and so forth. But even that ended in 1877. But here we have 151 years later, the fact that the St. Louis Police Department is still, for political reasons, controlled by the state of Missouri.
Okay, now let's get right to something that that is being contended by the antis here, and that mm-hmm. is that currently the city of St. Louis government is not, oh, shall we say, totally free of corruption, and is that, you know, is giving the control of this thing to Mayor Slay going to be better than giving the control of it to Jay Nixon?
Yeah, so here's my question. Where is the corruption? Are they the most efficient city in the country? Absolutely not.
Okay. As
a matter of fact, they're looking about reducing, and have proposed themselves to reduce their board of aldermen from 28, which is what they had when they had almost a million people, down to 14, which is much more reasonable. But here's this, you know, if I want to convince you to do something, I'm going to throw corruption out there.
Right.
So, that's bad. Corruption's bad. So one of the things when this was going through the legislature and was hung up because of political issues, one of the examples being given was that a policeman was ticketing a vendor for not having a vendor's license, which is required in the city.
Right.
And so when the policeman asked the guy for his vendor's license, he said, "There's my vendor's license," and he gave him a card of an alderman and said, "You know, I gave my money to this guy." You know, I guess he made a campaign donation or whatever, said, "That's my license." And so the opponents of this said, "That's corruption. That right there shows because you know, the guy turns it in, it's not investigated." And
right.
that was an example of corruption in St. Louis. The problem is that guy turned that complaint into his superiors, and his superiors, I guess, took it up to the police commission, which has nothing to do with the city of St. Louis, all appointed by Jay Nixon.
Right.
That was corruption in the state-controlled police department. But this assertion of corruption, I don't know if you're familiar with Catherine Hennaway.
I'm not. You know, I'm not in St. Louis down here in the Southwest. No, I'm not.
Well, Catherine was the first woman speaker of the House. When Republicans took control, control of the House, she was the first speaker and the first woman ever to be elected speaker of the House.
Okay.
And Catherine was a very pretty, you know, straightforward, you know, she's going to tell you like it is sort of thing. Catherine, after she left the legislature, became the U.S. attorney of the Eastern District here in St. Louis and in Illinois. Catherine Hennaway would have been more than happy to have been on television with, you know, any alderman in cuffs, the mayor in cuffs, whoever is supposed to be so corrupt, if anybody had brought to her any proof of corruption. It's talked about, but it's not demonstrated, and it's not proven. And actually, the corruption is occurring in the state-controlled police board. One of the police members used his get-out-of-jail-free card to get his nephew out of jail after he was arrested for drunk and driving or something, and charges were never pressed because he got him out of jail. So the corruption issue is unfounded because nobody's ever pressed any charges or brought them forward for a U.S. attorney or anybody to press charges. And I guarantee you, even the U.S. attorney there now, who is a Democrat, Judge Callahan, or used to be a judge in Cole County, but Richard Callahan would gladly prosecute any corruption that existed if somebody brings it to him. Nobody ever does, because I'm not so sure that it exists at the level that everybody wants you to believe it does.
Okay. Now, another thing, let's just go ahead and get this out, is
sure.
A lot of people are concerned, I don't say a lot because I've only talked to or even heard from one or two people who are on the opposite side of this, but one of the concerns that they voice is some kind of guarantee that they say the police widows and pension fund is being very well managed now, and if you turn that over to the city, they're going to squander it. Jump into that.
Yeah, and that was the argument, one of the bigger arguments during the legislative debate on this issue. And I believe the legislature solved that problem. And as a matter of fact, it was solved in the last version that they could not get passed because of filibusters. It's solved in this version that's on the ballot, the statutory initiative that's on the ballot, because the police association voted to support this measure because they were convinced and guaranteed that the pension plans for widows, orphans, and everybody else was taken care of, was protected in a way in which they could accept it. And they were now on board with supporting this when before they were opposed to it because of that issue.
This is the same police association that previously sued to stop this thing.
Correct.
Okay.
They're 180 degrees out now, and they have worked, because they were part of the team that worked out a solution to this.
Right.
And again, I mean, that's the deal. You're free to oppose anything you want, but when it's something like this that belongs to the citizens of St. Louis, belongs to the taxpayers of St. Louis, you don't be against it. Help me find a solution. And that's what the POA did. They helped find the solution. They're on board and they're supporting this thing.
Okay, well, now I'm taking notes here because this is going to come up here from time to time when people call
sure.
in or when we have other guests. So tell me what's been done to protect it.
Well, they put it into statute. So let's make sure we have people understand. This is
okay.
a statutory initiative.
Right.
When the police department was taken over in 1861, it was by statute, not by a constitutional amendment.
Right. Okay.
So
and
this has been
a misunderstanding of mine. I thought this was a constitutional amendment, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, most of the time when you see something on the ballot, that's generally what it is, but it's not necessarily the case.
Right.
And this would be one of them. So it's a statutory initiative. And so the language that is in that statutory initiative very directly and specifically talks to the protection of the pensions. And it's in, I think it's in the 84 series. It's online at the Secretary of State's off website if people want to
right.
go to it about dealing with the Metropolitan Police Department if they want to search for it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are specific language in this proposal that you'll be voting on that protects the retirement plan here. It also protects the transition, so that, you know, if you're a sergeant under the police commission, you're going to be a sergeant under the next, you know, when the city takes over. It
right.
provides for a transition period. It also addresses some of the concerns we just talked about, for instance, with corruption. It outlines and very clearly states what any elected official or appointed official or anything cannot do in relation to trying to influence investigations and et cetera. So it's all laid out in the statute that people are being asked to vote yes on.
Okay. You got any idea that is or isn't covered in the ballot language or
well,
sure,
you know, the ballot language
is only about three
yeah,
sentences. So, yeah.
Yeah. The ballot language itself by law is restricted to no more than, I think it's 100 words.
Right.
50 words, 100 words. And so it is very difficult to get that in there. And I do not have that ballot language in front of me. I don't know if you do.
I don't. I wouldn't have asked you that if I did, Carl. I promise you. No.
That's fine. But I don't have that in there, so I don't know exactly. I'd have to look it up, and I can do that and send it to you for later. But the ballot language is limited to 100 words, and not counting us, thus, and all the other stuff like that. So it is difficult to get just everything in there.
Okay.
But basically, we're talking about returning after 151 years the police department to the control of the citizens of St. Louis through their elected officials.
Okay. So one of the bad things then about the way it's done now, as you alluded to, is you don't, as a citizen, you don't have a feel for the chain of command. You don't feel like you have anyone being held accountable to you.
Right. You can pick up the phone and call the mayor because you vote on the mayor.
Yeah.
Whether you voted for him, I guess, him, you vote on him. And so you can pick up the phone and call him. He's one of five members. He takes that back to the board, and they can. And usually, what happens is, that's nice,
right?
Because you know, four out of five wins the vote. Three out of five win the vote. And not all of the board of commissioners have been totally bad or haven't always not paid attention to the city and the citizens there. But you have no control of that, and you have no guarantee of that.
Okay. The another thing that all of us out here in outstate are aware of is this recent article that says St. Louis is the number one most dangerous city in the United States. Now, is there any way that is somehow connected to the efficiency or the workings or the internal politics of the police department that would be helped, or is that just something that we've got to live with until we fix it?
Well, and this isn't a recent deal. St. Louis has been on that list,
right?
Number one on that list for quite some time. I believe the mayor and some of the folks there would tell you that they would argue with the way that's calculated. So I don't get into that stuff.
Okay.
But, it is what it is. And the FBI's up there.
Let's not make it number one. I've been there. I've been walking around downtown at night, so it's pretty damn dangerous.
you just have to notify the police when you come into town that way.
Exactly. Go ahead.
But what they would tell you and is that they do have ideas because, they do have these ward meetings. They have all these discussions, and actually police do attend that. And they have some great ideas about how they could improve community policing and those sorts of things. But the Board of Police Commissioners haven't felt the need to enact them in such that way. And a lot of these are good ideas from the citizens, out of these ward meetings and different discussions. And what I believe you'd hear the mayor tell you and others is that if they had control, they would have more control about trying these things that they believe would work for neighbors and neighborhoods. Because not every, not one size fits all in every neighborhood in St. Louis. There's a lot of diversity, even within certain neighborhoods of St. Louis. And so what works in one neighborhood doesn't work in the other, but that's not what they're seeing, that flexibility from the Board of Police Commissioners, because, quite honestly, there's no reason for them to feel any obligation to respond to that. To what the citizens are saying, because they don't answer to the citizens.
Right. I mean, that makes perfect sense to me, and I can tell you as a person who loves accountability at every level. I mean, I'm working hard on something, getting something going on this accountability of the panel that appoints the judges. Or even accountability of the judges themselves. So I mean, I'm huge on everybody who's drawing a dime out of my check being accountable to me at some level.
Well, and here's the other thing, too, is that there is a question, and people disagree about what the outcome is, but there's been some court decisions that indicate the city actually is only liable for a certain amount of money to support the police department, and that's basically back to the Hancock time when it was implemented. So, and I don't remember what that number is, so don't hold me to it. But I think it's $160 million or something like that. So, and they're paying a lot more than that now. So theoretically, because this is a state police department, St. Louis said, hey, we're going to buck up our $160 million. It's up to you to come up with the other $40 million, state, because it's your police department. And courts have found routinely that this is a state agency, And so when it's a state agency, guess who owns it?
Right.
You have a piece of it in Greene County. I've got a piece of it in St. Charles. Everybody in the state has a piece of ownership of the St. Louis Police Department right now. And the city has not pursued that. They may or may not have been successful if they do pursue it, but I think they have a decent chance of being successful based on court cases in the past. But one thing that has been proven is that the state, that's you and me, by the way, are liable for some of the liability claims of the police department because it is a state agency. So every year, the state budgets up to $1 million for paying off claims against the St. Louis Police Department. And that's $1 million that doesn't get spent anywhere else in the state of Missouri because we are supporting our police department.
Right. That's $1 million coming partly out of my paycheck that actually ought to be coming out of somebody in St. Louis's paycheck.
Right.
So there you go, folks out there who aren't from St. Louis. And that's why I got into that part first, Carl, is I didn't want those other people tuning out and saying that this isn't about me. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk to Carl about something a little bit more statewide as well. It is a fact, am I right, Carl, that there's only two cities in the whole United States that find themselves in this position?
That is correct.
And they are both in Missouri.
We win the prize.
That's right. And my talking around has led me to believe that the majority of people in Kansas City don't want any part of this. And I may be wrong. Carl will tell me when we come back if I am. And if I'm right, he'll tell me why Kansas City is so different than St. Louis and why us folks ought to care about the people in St. Louis on this particular issue. I'm Dave, that's Carl, and we'll be back on the Missouri Grassroots Radio Network. This is the Hour of Truth.
Here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, it's Christmas in July and August and September. Last year on Christmas Eve, MGC paid off the department store layaway accounts of two Missouri families who were not able to provide Christmas for their children. This year, we would like to at least double that number, and in an attempt to do that by the holiday season, we're asking you to consider donating a few dollars toward that effort. We know the holiday season is the most difficult time of year to ask for donations, so we're planning ahead and asking you to give whatever you can so that a few Missouri families will be able to celebrate at Christmas. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and look for the Secret Santa page. All the details are there for you to donate by PayPal, check, or money order. Conservatives have proven to be the most generous and most benevolent people in the United States. Please help us with this very small charitable project.
Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty, or give me death.
347-677-1835, 347-677-1835, weigh in on this. I'm Dave. This is the Missouri Grassroots Radio Network, the Thursday night, I'm already behind Hour of Truth. That guy right over there is Carl Bearden. You can't see him because this is radio, and just take my word for it. That's him, and there he is. Carl, tell me about this whole thing. Is the whole history of the Kansas City thing different than the history of the St. Louis thing?
Very much so, but first I want to tell you I showered and shaved just to be on your show.
Okay, well, that's. I'm sorry. We'll do TV next time, Carl.
All right. All right. So, Kansas City is completely different. Those folks who've been around Missouri have heard the name Pendergast.
Yes.
At some point or other, and some people want to. I saw it recently where some people want to say that there is a Pendergast-like operation in St. Louis, and I'm pretty sure that Tom Pendergast, wherever he is spinning. Because he would be embarrassed by that, because he had a significant organization, which did not, by the way, just deal in Kansas City. He controlled judges in the state, state legislators, and everything. He was extremely powerful, but Kansas City was his.
Right.
If you've been to Kansas City and you see all the concrete buildings, Tom Pendergast.
Yeah. In fact, it's Jackson County, isn't it, that they almost named Pendergast County? Yeah.
Yeah. So here's the deal on that. So, and I believe it was the late 30s or so, his power began to wane.
Right.
And there was an attorney general on the state level that decided that he couldn't be supporting Pendergast any longer. Did a big investigation. The feds came in, basically busted the deal. But it was so entrenched in Kansas City in many levels, but specifically in the police department as the Pendergast operation, that the state did come in and take over the police department in Kansas City, but under different circumstances. And in that part, you are talking about definite, provable, no question about it, corruption.
Right.
Go ahead.
And you folks, I mean, they don't do a lot of movies about Kansas City, but it is as bad, folks, as and I did a little study on the Pendergast machine because I'm into this judge thing and how the Missouri plan, Missouri plan came about, and it's pretty much the same thing.
That was a Pendergast deal, sure.
Yeah. And so, folks, it really was. It really was as bad as what you see on TV in Chicago and New York, of where, you know, the local police chief or one or two of the local precinct captains was down at Pendergast's house having some beer and discussing what they were and were not going to allow to go on.
Yeah, you didn't get a job unless Pendergast's organization approved it. So everybody was indebted to that. And so under completely separate or different conditions, that was taken over. If I recall correctly, they did give it back for a period of time, but it didn't work out, and they took it back. The people in Kansas City, I think, are turning a little bit on this. They do not want the control of their police department back at this point. I think they will over time. And that's the other thing. I mean, the people of St. Louis do. They want their police department back, so there's two differences there. But what will happen, and I think you'll see Kansas City vote to approve this. It doesn't include them. But I think you'll see them approve the ballot measure to give St. Louis back their police department.
Oh, it does not include them?
No.
Okay. I wasn't aware of that. I thought that it actually did both, but
that's a different statute that Kansas City. You know, Kansas City also, we talked about money earlier. Kansas City's statute on money is different. They have a percentage basis that they have to spend, and so on and so forth. So it's structured. I mean, even the state takeover and running of it is structured significantly different than that of St. Louis.
I see.
And so this is a different statute area, and only addresses the St. Louis side of it.
Okay, that's news to me, and I mean, most of this whole Prop A thing is news to most of our listeners. But we'll be talking about this more and more as November gets closer. This is something that's going to be on your ballot, folks. And what is going to be the main advantage that if you live in downtown St. Louis, you're going to notice when this thing comes about? Is this something that's going to be totally transparent to you as a citizen who runs a little mom-and-pop shop down on the corner?
Well, I think for the most part, if they do it right, it will be primarily transparent. But what you will see is probably a more community-focused policing. You'll see a police department that is more responsive to the taxpayers and voters of St. Louis because their elected officials are doing. Now, St. Louis is a charter city, and I'm sure people know that St. Louis is not part of any county. So it's one of seven cities in the whole country that is a city not within a county.
Right.
And so they have both county and city functions there. So they have a charter. Their charter would dictate under this, and I think there'll be some things that they'll look about changing to improve that, is, you know, the mayor appoints the police or the public safety director, and then the public safety director works with appointing this police commission and so forth. So their charter is already laid out to do that. It probably could be improved upon, but there are a lot of people that want perfect to be the enemy of good, and this is a good bill and should be passed for the people of St. Louis and all of us in the state, because we have that liability hanging overhead as well.
Right. So the accountability of the if this passes, the accountability of that officer who walks the beat in front of my store and I see beating some little kid is I pick up the phone and I now call a police commissioner who is appointed by my mayor.
Right. So it's in that chain. I mean, so there's direct accountability all the way up the chain. The mayor fires a police the director of public safety, which happened not long ago and was big to do, and he could fire the other folks. So those are sorts of accountability deals. It goes through a specified chain, but it's much better than what it would be now because, the governor's office or governor's mansion phone doesn't ring 11 o'clock when somebody from St. Louis complained about their police department because they don't have that access.
Especially some little single policeman down on the street corner who's taking a little graft from the drug dealer.
Right, and and these ward meetings. I mean, in the neighborhoods, they have some pretty active neighborhood groups there that want to do things and want to be cooperative. They need some tools and some help to do that, and I think you'll see that improve.
Right now, can you tell me how funding will change? I mean, now suddenly you and I have no part in paying for the St. Louis Police Department. So does this all now fall on the shoulders of the guy downtown who's trying to run a mom and pop store? Does he see his local taxes go through the roof because he's buying his own police department?
No, because what happens is today we're not really as state taxpayers. We're not paying for the day-to-day operations of the police department.
Okay.
We could be, and that's why I say that the specter is out there that with a court case, I believe it happened right after the Hancock Amendment was passed, pretty much says here are the requirements, here's all that the state, all that the city is liable for, and the city could, if they chose, try to come back to the state and try to make up that difference. Would they win? I don't know. So our exposure to paying millions of dollars is there. A judge would decide whether or not that would happen. But what we do pay right now is that liability fund that we fund. We do that for both Kansas City and for St. Louis. We pay more for St. Louis than Kansas City just because of the structure of the two things. But those we're definitely paying as state taxpayers. So that's what would change. They would then be responsible for all their liability claims at that point.
Okay.
And the reason they came back and did that was, quite frankly, who has the deeper pockets, the state or the city? And so obviously the state does, and that's why the legislature some time ago had passed that liability limit to those two cities.
Okay. So now in review, there is a ballot initiative. It is Proposition A. It has to do with returning to St. Louis, and here's something I've learned tonight, only to St. Louis, has nothing to do with Kansas City, folks, if you're up in the Northwest. To St. Louis, the control of their local police department, which was taken away from them 180 years ago, it would return. It does protect, I'm given to understand, the pension and widows and orphans fund that are currently managed by the state, and it would make the city of St. Louis policemen on the corner accountable through their city. And the management of their city to the citizens of the city without seriously impacting financially a citizen in the city of St. Louis. Did I just about wrap that up right?
That's pretty much. I mean, I don't think anybody should hold you to exactly what's said.
Right.
But that's a good summary. It was 151 years ago, not 180, but it's close enough.
Okay. All right. 150 years ago, I'm learning my history here tonight, too. What else have you got to say about this, Carl?
Well, here's the fundamental deal. Look, I don't think you can get too many people outside of St. Louis City and some inside St. Louis City to say that they are the most efficiently run organization. But a lot of the opposition to this, particularly in the St. Louis area, is the fact that it's been under Democratic control for so long. That, however, has been a choice of the people voting people in. And so do you penalize people of St. Louis for making decisions that you don't agree with and electing Democratic leadership for so long? I think that's a philosophical deal. It's not a principle deal. Here's what I believe the principle is on this. The principle is I pay the taxes. I should control through my elected officials, directly elected officials, I should control what happens to how my tax money is spent. And because I don't do that if I were a St. Louis City taxpayer, I don't have that control. I send my money to this police commission board that I don't elect. I don't have any say-so. I can't remove in any way, shape, or form, except for one member being the mayor. That is principally not what we would think of individual responsibilities and what we believe accountability should be. And so I think just based on that alone, if you forget anything else, do you want your taxpayer money being spent by somebody who is directly accountable to you, by somebody you vote for? And I think almost everybody in the state would say yes.
Okay, so here we're going to, you and I are going to speculate for a minute. That sounds like a no-brainer to me. So if the chief opposition is saying that this is a matter of controlling corruption, and if the chief opposition is saying that the problem with this is what's that the mayor is going to abscond with the retirement funds, and none of that is true, what is the real motivation of anyone who would not want to do this?
Well, none of that is true, and none of that is, as a matter of fact, I can disprove the last part because of the language in the initiative. And they can't prove the first part because I don't see any pictures of the mayor or of any alderman or anything else on that control these sorts of things on the television, in the paper, being arrested and sentenced for corruption, because there's no evidence there to prove that.
Right.
And so bring me the evidence, and then we'll start with Dr. Tarkovat. So what is the real reason? It's a political reason. The Democratic control of St. Louis City is something that a lot of people cannot tolerate. And you know, I don't think it's done the city favors either, but, you know, that's their choice. I mean, I get the vote, and sometimes my guys win, sometimes my guys lose. But the majority elects their elected officials. That's the way our system's set up. We should not penalize those taxpayers by withholding control of their police department for making those decisions we don't agree with. If that gets bad enough, they will make different decisions. But that's up to them. That's not up to people who don't agree with those decisions. And so, you know, again, if you want your Greene County Sheriff's Department or your Springfield Police Department to be controlled by Governor Nixon or any other governor in Jefferson City, let's do that. If it's such a good idea, let's do that. Because I can guarantee you there is corruption everywhere around this state. It's not just St. Louis City. It's just not Kansas City. You know, we had a mayor in St. Peter's that's serving some federal time for some corruption. there's corruption everywhere you go because individuals are imperfect.
Exactly.
And so is that how we're going to, is that our gauge for not giving it back? It's not a good enough gauge because there's no widespread corruption proven.
Good. Thanks, Carl. It's always a pleasure. I you are very knowledgeable in the things that that I count on you for. And that's why I call you along for things like this, and I know you're always willing to come along and help me out when I get into something that I'm going to stumble on. And I appreciate that. This is Carl Bearden. Hey, Carl, tell us about who you are and what you do now. You get a chance to push yourself.
Appreciate it. Executive director of two grassroots organizations, United for Missouri's Future, which is a 501c3. It's a tax deductible, and we do education stuff there. And also of United for Missouri, which is an issue advocacy of nonprofit C4, both nonprofits. And so we have about 6,000 members statewide. And these are the sorts of things that we try to educate people on and give them the information. And then United for Missouri actually advocates. And so House Bill 1329, we've been educating people on. We will be advocating that they contact their reps and senators to not override the veto because it's the wrong thing to do. So hopefully we'll get to talk about that later. But that's a distinction. We educate people. We've been a couple blogs on that so far. We'll do a couple more. And then we'll do an action alert, which we issue advocacy.
And you do not get paid by any casinos?
Oh, absolutely not.
Thanks, Carl.
You know, it's like people used to say, well, you're getting all those kickbacks. And I said, well, I got to find that guy that's getting all my kickbacks because he owes me a lot of money with interest.
Thanks, Carl.
All right, Dave, thank you.
I enjoyed the picture of your grandkid the other night. Sure is fun to see. Have a good one. We appreciate you coming along. Good night.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate you having me. Thanks. Bye-bye.
That was Carl Bearden from United of Missouri, who's talking to us about what happened to St. Louis, why the police control in St. Louis currently belongs to the governor, and why the voters should be thinking about giving the people, good people of St. Louis, back control of their police department. I learned a couple of things tonight, and I'm sure that there are opposite opinions. You could, in fact, listen to last night's show and get some views from Mr. Wigert, who is the anti on this, and hear what he has to say. And then, you know, what you need to do is you need to pull up that ballot language at the Secretary of State's office and convince yourself one guy or the other here preaching on this thing is correct. Do your own research and find out what the facts are. I haven't made up my mind yet, and I don't know if Lisa has either. Have you, Lisa?
Well, I think I have. I think I am not for local control for St. Louis.
Really? Okay. But it's okay for me to have local control down here in Springfield, right?
Well, I just think that it's a unique situation. You just don't. I think that this until that I can find absolute proof. Mr. Bearden didn't give us any specifics on the language and the statutes. I'm not buying. I'm not buying that all that money is safe. It's a
okay.
Money thing.
It's okay. All right. Well, there's Lisa's view on it. And Lisa, we had a little commercial a little while ago that kind of piqued my interest. What is this Secret Santa thing going on?
Secret Santa, Missouri Grassroots Coalition, because patriot groups and patriots across Missouri are the most benevolent folks in the country. We want to help make a nice Christmas for some Missouri families here in our region. It's been a tough year for everybody, and it's likely to be a tough Christmas again this year. Last year, Missouri Grassroots Coalition went to a couple of department stores on Christmas Eve and paid off the layaway accounts of a couple of families who had toys there who couldn't pay off their accounts by the end of Christmas. So they went in and paid those accounts off, and a couple of great families were able to put presents under the tree for their kids for Christmas morning. And we're looking to be able to double the number of people that we can help this year in Missouri. We're just asking you to donate just a few dollars, you know, not a lot of money, just a couple of dollars here before the Christmas season. Hermione quit. Before the Christmas season starts, dog, she's like, donate that money. Before the Christmas season starts. So we don't have to hitch up during Christmas time when you're spending all kinds of money spending on your own families.
And we're not looking for like $10,000 or $20,000 here.
No.
We're not like trying to get a senator elected or anything.
No, we're looking to raise $500. You know, we're not looking to break the bank here. We're not looking to, you know, move mountains. We just want to make a nice Christmas for just a few families. And do our part here. You know, it's a small philanthropic project. Shouldn't break anybody. And but you know, the hearts of some kids should be filled with joy on Christmas and save that magic Christmas spirit for some young folks in our state.
Absolutely. You're not going to make it tomorrow night for the roundtable. You got something going, so I'll be talking to you on the air next week. We'll miss you tomorrow.
Well, I will miss you, too. I'll try to call in if I can get away.
Sure. And we'll be looking into that Spence thing. I kind of would like to go up to Columbia and see what Spence has to say. I've never actually been to an event where Spence spoke. I was a Randall's man, and it's kind of been my impression that with the exception of one or two very brief spates, Mr. Spence didn't come out of his shell very much during the primary.
I am from the St. Louis area, from where he's from. I've seen him a few times, but yeah. I didn't see a whole lot of effort coming out of him in the campaign. It's my understanding
right.
He was outstate a little bit more, which may have been the reason why his numbers were so big during the election. But, not a dynamo campaigner from what I've seen.
Right. I'm kind of interested in going down for that. You know what you got coming up next week?
We'll have another Patriot Group spotlight, and hopefully we will have wrapped up the Todd Akin thing by this week. Hopefully we'll be on a new track with that. We're going to talk maybe a little bit about executive orders. We've been working a little bit on that, and the rest is to be determined.
Okay. You know who's on the spotlight yet?
Cooper County Patriots.
Cooper County. Oh, that's one of my favorite groups down there. That's Ron, isn't it? Yeah, it is. It's Mr. Saunders.
Saunders.
But anyway, I'm headed down there next month, first week of next month. I'm going to go down there and meet those people, and we're all going to have a little chat about a couple of mutually interesting topics. So I'm really looking forward to that. That's a good active group down there.
And if anybody out there knows a group that they would like to promote, that's one of the things that we want to do here at Missouri Grassroots Radio is promote all those grassroots groups and get your name out there so that you can be recognizable to the folks in your area and join and gain numbers in your area. So we're happy to spotlight you. Give us a call here at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org.
That's right. Okay, Lisa, thank you very much. It's been a good week. I've enjoyed having you tonight, as I always do. And folks out there, this is the grassroots. You are the grassroots. And what you have to do right now, from today forward, I don't care what you've been spent all day today talking about. I don't care what you spent all day yesterday talking about. But from this point forward, you need to never, ever, ever let the conversation be about rape. You need to never, ever, ever let the conversation be about abortion. You need to take it upon yourself to turn this thing back to the issues. To turn this thing back to what Claire, I'm telling you right now, I don't care if you run Monty Python for Senate. If you can keep this election about Claire McCaskill, then you can't lose this race. So don't let them make it about something else. That's my take. And with that, I'm going to wish you all a good night. I'll be here tomorrow for the Missouri Roundtable. I'm sure that Todd Akin will be on the menu. Anything can happen in the next 24 hours. We'll talk a little bit about Lisa's interview last night with Peter Kinder and where that's at. We'll be talking about some of the upcoming events, and we'll probably talk a little bit more about Prop A. I'm Dave. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio Network. You've been listening to The Hour of Truth on Thursday night. Until tomorrow, good night.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.
God bless America.